From 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. On today's show, our Across the Divide special, a critical conversation on the next steps for Foxconn. We'll look at the ramifications of the massive planned factory in Racine County in areas like education.
We are looking at what are the programs that need to be in place to help people get the jobs that are not only here right now, but also those that will be coming to the area.
Plus the effects the Foxconn plant could have on the environment.
What we know, which is very little right now, is that all the environmental standards have been relinquished from this site. So we are trying to find out. That's what we're trying to find out. What regulations do they have?
And how a regional transportation component could be important.
It saves the taxpayers money because it enables people who are unemployed, who otherwise would be drawing unemployment pay to get a job.
Lake Effect is next. News is first. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Bonnie North. Today's show is an hour-long special recorded on-site at the Prairie School in Wind Point. A critical conversation on next steps for Foxconn is part of our Across the Divide series, presented in collaboration with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The planned Foxconn factory in Racine County would be the largest development deal in Wisconsin history. Company and state officials say the facility, which would make LCD screens, could employ as many as 10,000 people and has the potential to transform the local economy. But with promises and predictions have come questions about who stands to benefit from the jobs, the impact the factory would have on local taxes, and on the environment. Foxconn was offered a spot on our panel, but declined to make a representative available. But we were joined by Richard Longworth of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, former Racine Mayor John Dickert, who's now CEO of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, along with Debbie Davidson, Vice President of Business and Workforce Solutions at Gateway Technical College. Lake Effect's Mitch Teich and the Journal Sentinel's Aaron Richards moderated the discussion. It started with the panelists offering their top-of-mind thoughts about the Foxconn project, starting with Debbie Davidson.
What we think about most at Gateway is how we prepare the next workforce, no matter who the employer is in our area. We've been doing that for over 100 years, and so we are looking at what are the programs that need to be in place to help people get the jobs that are not only here right now, but also those that will be coming to the area.
John Dickert.
For our organization, we're up to 131 mayors now from the U.S. and Canada that are on the Great Lakes or the tributaries. And obviously, the mayors are seeing trending where you're having more and more issues regarding water and drinking water around the country. And if you Google drinking water, you'll see all those daily stories that are coming up. So knowing that this trending is coming back our way, obviously they want to work, number one, to protect the water, to make sure it stays clear, clean, and healthy for you. But then also, when people want to utilize it, we think that's a great thing. It means it's building our economy. But the key is you don't have to sacrifice the economy for the environmental. With the technology that we have, you can make them both work.
And Richard Longworth.
Well, I did come up from Chicago, and I bring word from Illinois to the good taxpaying citizens of Wisconsin. And that word is thanks. You know, it is likely, I mean, it's certain that quite a number of those jobs at Foxconn are going to go to Illinois residents who will spend their paychecks back home in Illinois. Some of the business services, the legal, the accounting, the consulting, will end up in Chicago's loop. Not all of it, but a good chunk of it. Ditto with the air traffic and logistics through O'Hare and at least some of the parts suppliers. Now, this is good news for Illinois, and we didn't have to pay a dime, may even turn some of us into Packers fans.
Either that or last Sunday did. Yeah.
We hope not. Seriously,
there has got to be a regional way to lure in and benefit from outside investment, a better way to share the costs and the benefits of all of this. And I do hope we can talk about this regional issue, about uniting this great swath from Milwaukee down through Chicago and into northern Indiana. I hope we can talk about this before the evening is over, because I think it is an important factor in this.
So maybe we should start with a question about, maybe Debbie could take this one. How are we going to know that many of these jobs are actually going to go to Wisconsin residents? That's not written into the state incentives plan. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that, or how we will position workers in Wisconsin for these jobs. And then, Richard, maybe you could talk a little bit about what this regional approach would look like, and if there's still a chance to actually develop elements of that.
Okay, thank you. I think with the low unemployment rate that we're seeing right now within this area, we know that most people are employed, but they may not be employed at the skill level that they could rise to. So for us, a major part of what we're doing is taking a look at the underemployed and messaging to them the need to upgrade your skills for the jobs that are here and the jobs that are coming. Some of those jobs will be in manufacturing, but many of those jobs will be in ancillary areas, could be service, could be retail, could be many other areas as the economy grows. So we have 60 different programs at the college. Manufacturing is one chunk of them, but healthcare and all the other programs are there as well. So for us, we're looking at how do we get people into the right job? How do they invest in themselves from a time standpoint, make sure that they are upskilling to that next level? And then we have lots of manufacturing programs, so we're looking at how do we grow some of those from a capacity standpoint, grow some of them from an equipment standpoint, and the technology level that's needed not only by Foxconn, but employers that are here right now. So how do we make sure that our program is current and we're attracting individuals to manufacturing? We have a strong manufacturing economy in this area, so you would think most people know that manufacturing can make a good life for people. They can make a good wage, and so we keep working on the attraction of individuals to take the courses and the programs at Gateway to make them ready for the jobs that are there.
If I could just jump in, how can you give us a snapshot of how prepared Gateway is at this point in time? How much does the school have to change to be able to adapt to the different kinds of jobs that might exist either at Foxconn or, you know, further down the supply chain?
Sure. So many of those jobs are in an area called, it has numerous names, mechatronics, advanced manufacturing, industry 4.0, it all really means the same thing. So how do we integrate information technology with manufacturing to make businesses more productive? We have a mechatronics program at the college. We've had it for a number of years. We have just gone through a revision process, working with a number of local employers throughout Southeast Wisconsin to make sure that it is the latest and the greatest. The expansion that we have will increase the capacity of our labs, not necessarily to look at new equipment, but more equipment, programmable controllers and robotics and things of that nature. And then we're working with our sister colleges. So we're working with Milwaukee Area Tech and Waukesha County Tech, and we're working with the universities because we know that Gateway can't do it alone. We need to have this network of educational providers.
Is it a strain on Gateway?
At this point, no.
To that same point, this development would have the biggest impact if it's hiring local non-employed people instead of poaching other employed people from businesses that are already here. I know that's a big concern, especially in this particular region. How does Gateway or any other partner you're working with make sure that those jobs are in some way being positioned to go to people who are not employed at this point?
Right. So the talent attraction. So you have a local workforce plan, right? How do we get the local people that aren't employed to employment? And sometimes you're starting at getting a GED and moving up the ladder from there. There's a lot of people within Racine that do not have a GED. Without a high school diploma, they're not going to have access to that. So we have a major initiative going with Racine County on GED attainment. And so the local workforce plan is working on that. Then you have the talent attraction. How do we get people as a state, not as Gateway, not as Racine, but as a state to recognize the opportunities that are here and move to this area from other parts of the country?
Deborah, I'd be interested to know, what is Foxconn's commitment to the training? How much are they going to put into this training? How much of the training are they going to do themselves? How much, what's the financial contribution? I think this gets to the broader issue of Foxconn as a corporate citizen. How is it going to fit into this community? But right at the start, training the workers and helping you train them is key.
Right. So like most companies in our Gateway Service, Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth County, so like most companies in our area, they benefit by hiring the graduates come out of the program. So the companies are not paying for the training as you might think. They are hiring the graduates out of a program. Every company in our area does that. If they were to do something very customized, and we do customized training for about 150 different companies every year in the Gateway District, where we're customizing curriculum specifically for their employees, whether typically short-term training, then those companies pay for that through a contract for service, which is something that's set up with all 16 tech colleges throughout the state and part of state statute.
Can I just add one thing? When you're talking about people that are unemployed right now, and it's a really good question, and you get to that unemployed, if you do not have a transportation mechanism to feed this site on three shifts, now assuming that Foxconn is going to do three shifts, and I don't know if they are or not, but if you're not doing at least first and second, and that means not only going to but coming home, you can offer the employees all you want. Because the reality is, if they're at that level where they're just trying to get out into a job, they don't have the transportation mechanism that's available to them. So you've got to provide that.
So what would be the ideas for viable transportation links, not only for people who are living within, 5 miles of this factory, but people in the central city of Milwaukee who we've all been trying to figure out ways to get jobs to people there. There doesn't seem to be a mechanism for that at all at this point if you don't have a car.
Well, first of all, and this goes to the point that, listen, we've got to start talking about this region as a region. The 2050 plan from OECD shows that there's going to be 10 million more people in this region by 2050. We're not prepared for that. So the fact is, if you take a step back and you say, how would you design the system for the employment and the energy that is in this entire system, assuming that people are coming back to water, you would say, number one, you need a train system that's efficient and effective, and we have that in Metra. You need a commuter rail system for people that can't afford a Metra or an Amtrak. And then you need lanes for these young people that we try to attract to our communities, right? Because the businesses follow the young people, which means bike paths and walkability and things like that. So if you step back and look at that system is doable. The difficulty is you've got to get everybody on the same page to understand that you're going to get away from a car economy and you're going to get back to a functioning economy. If there's one thing that every study shows, you can build 100 miles wide in a highway and it will be filled with cars. And now they're talking about automated cars, which is just going to add to the chaos. So if you step back, there is a system there. And the Tri-State Alliance, in tandem with Chicago, Milwaukee, and everybody else, has been looking at that system. And it's a doable system. But everybody has to agree to put that first instead of all the other ancillary stuff that people tend to argue about.
John, one thing we're finding on this tri-state thing, and you've run into this since you've been very much involved in it, is that if you rely on your state governments, if you rely on Springfield and Indianapolis and Madison, it ain't going to happen.
Well, what's the incentive for states to go at this in a regional way?
Not much.
I think Foxconn is an
governors, Foxconn is an example. Scott Walker, all governors. Love to cut ribbons. They just love to cut ribbons when the photographers are out there. A ribbon that's cut in Racine is terrific. A ribbon that, if this had been located south of the state line in Gurnee, say, Bruce Rauner would have got to cut the ribbon. There is no incentive to act regionally. There's a terrific incentive for all this, this rather continuous economic area that stretches from Milwaukee on south and certainly through here to work together and to work more independently of the states. I would add on the transportation thing, subsidized bus services. Bus services running all hours of the day and night cost some taxpayer money. It saves the taxpayers money because it enables people who are unemployed, who otherwise would be drawing unemployment pay and other government subsidies to get a job.
So let's add some data to this conversation. If you were to, for instance, pull a commuter rail all the way up through the system, which we looked at in the past, and I will tell you that there has been some new conversations about, you know, the extension of the metro into Milwaukee, which is great. You pull a metro line in, you're taking 1,600 cars off the road every day. If you're pulling 1,600 cars off the road, you know, the average people out here is paying $751 a year for congestion. So if you pull those off, what you tend to do is you lighten up the traffic for what? The trucking industry. The trucking industry then saves money for the business. The business now is more attractive to our area. There's reality to this, but there's also logistical economics to this. And that's why I say you've got to take a step back, though. And everybody has to look at it from the perspective of how are we going to grow this region and really help out those people that really need the jobs.
And you can't leave it to the states. This tri-state thing, to explain, this was something that came off an OECD study, and it's a going concern. But the idea is to treat this economic region like the region it is. I was talking with a couple of the economists from the OECD who did the original report. They've done these regional reports all around the world. They had said they had never seen political hostility anywhere. And the political hostility was between the states. It's those state lines are killing us and how to work across those. I think that's exactly what you're talking about.
Where has it worked?
All over Europe.
All over Europe.
I mean, is there anywhere in the U.S. that it's worked?
It's never been tried anywhere in the U.S. The Chicago region was the first one that they tried.
This was the first time it had ever been done outside of... outside of the U.S.
However, there are places in the Chesapeake Bay Area around Philadelphia and Delaware, they are working together.
Right. There are metropolitan areas that cover multiple states, and they do have regional entities that mm-hmm. kind of guide this kind of development.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, Washington, D.C., for example.
But we've never really been able to do that here.
We'll take a quick break and then return with more of our Across the Divide conversation, a critical conversation on next steps for Foxconn. That's when Lake Effect continues in a moment on WUWM. Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Let's get back to our Across the Divide conversation about Foxconn. It was recorded at Prairie School in Wynn Point. It's moderated by Lake Effect's Mitch Teich and Aaron Richards of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're hearing from Richard Longworth of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, Debbie Davidson of Gateway Technical College, and former Racine Mayor John Dickert of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative. Given how many entities have been involved in the Foxconn deal, Aaron Richards wanted to know whether there's any precedent for creating a single body to oversee various aspects of such a far-reaching project. John Dickert offered his thoughts.
That's what the Tri-State Alliance has been trying to do for about 6 years now, is to try to get everybody to sing from the same hymnal in the sense that you're all going to be rewarded and it'll all work and it'll all save money if you'll work together. But you know, there's also you've got Sewer PAC, Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, and M7, and all these different other organizations that are looking at this. But it's the difficulty is the lines. I mean, it's people tend to make those lines pretty hard and fast, and it's unfortunate because it's not helping you out.
So we've been, inundated with questions already over the internet or over Wi-Fi or 4G or however we're getting these questions. A number of them are linked to the environment, and I guess I don't have a name for who submitted this one, but maybe John Dickert, you could reflect on it. Do we have any sense for how a factory, even one of this size, might impact Lake Michigan?
Well, this is one of the things that we're looking at, and you know, the compact was designed for the very reason of understanding and recognizing the fact that, you know, Mother Nature and the good Lord allowed us to have these Great Lakes, right? 10,000 years ago said, here is a gift. And now what we don't realize oftentimes, and there's no reason you probably should, but the Great Lakes only recharge at 1% per year. And the governors and the premiers, you know, years ago understood that. And they said, we better protect this. Because I got to tell you, I got requests as far as Arizona when I was the mayor saying, hey, pipe it out to us. And I said, no, you're a desert. you know, it just goes through. So you know, there was a lot of anger in that response that why not? And I said, because this is our resource. You know, we don't have 90-degree weather in January. So we'll stay with the coal, but we'll stay with the water. So the compact that everybody looked at it and said, we've got to really watch what we're doing with this water. 10 million gallons a day in the sense of, can Racine handle it? Yes, we can. We're doing about 14 or 15 million gallons a day right now. We're designed to pump 40. But it's the start of what we see coming in and how many. The question is, do you balance the environmentals with the withdrawals? We can handle it, but we have to have those two work synonymously.
We've got a question from someone named Jim. This is for Debbie. Off of your point earlier about tailored training, has Gateway been asked by Foxconn to do tailored training for them?
No. We've been working with them at looking at existing curriculum and redesigning in a degree program. They have talked to us about wanting students. They want students to have associate degrees. They have hired some interns, and they wanted interns that were out of manufacturing, engineering, or IT, who were on a degree path, and asked them to bring their class schedules with them because it's important to Foxconn that these students continue their education and complete it.
I want to ask, maybe Richard Longworth's the person to answer this. You know, we talk about this as the largest foreign business investment deal on U.S. soil, but are there precedents that we can look to either in this region or elsewhere in the country of similarly scaled deals and look to them for either cautionary notes or even, you know, advantages that have come out of them?
I think that's very important. I think you do have to look around and see how other communities have coped with this. Unfortunately, in the Midwest, there's not much. Ever since about 1979, the history of manufacturing in the Midwest has been a fairly steady slide downhill. With some fairly dramatic closures, the most recent, or the most dramatic recently around here, GM in Janesville. Mitsubishi opened in Normal, Illinois back in 1988. I think they got up something like 4,000 employees and then declined and closed after about 25 years. Incidentally, David Haynes has written in the Journal Sentinel that'll be probably about 25 years before the Foxconn deal begins to pay off for Wisconsin. The place to look is down south. Back in the 80s, there are any number of major investments in southern states by foreign auto companies, German and Japanese. They're still up and running. They're still employing thousands of people. It looks from outside like a success story. I think it would be very wise to send people down to those towns. How did you do it? What was the impact on education? What was the impact on healthcare, on housing, on the standard of living, on living costs, all this sort of thing? Very important. And these are the people who can tell you about this. They did move into more of a older rural society down there rather than the sort of post-industrial society that we have here in Racine.
Well, right. So are there specific issues because we have such a manufacturing heritage in Racine and Kenosha and Milwaukee, are there specific issues in moving back to a place that has had manufacturing at its core? Maybe that's for any of you.
Well, one of the issues is whether we still have that manufacturing in our DNA. Do we still know manufacturing? Have we lost so much? Have we lost the idea of manufacturing, of working in a factory that powered this whole region for so long? A lot of the manufacturing has gone away. A lot of the knowledge and the habits have gone away. Do we still have that? And that's that may be one of the big jobs.
Yeah, I think that kind of leads to, you know, that manufacturing has gone away. And the manufacturing that's here now looks different than what it did before. And I think that's one of the hurdles we're trying to get past, is that a lot of people think of manufacturing the way it was in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and it looks very different right now. And so individuals, young people who say, I want to work with a computer, but I don't want to be in manufacturing, well, they're one and the same. You're working with a computer in a different way. Yes, it is still a factory, if you will. However, the type of technology they're interacting with and the work that they're doing and the analytics that they're doing is very different from the manufacturing that we saw in the past. And That's a message that parents and grandparents really need to get out to young people, saying it looks different now. So maybe your grandfather was laid off, your uncle was laid off. You know, those are the stories that we heard over and over. However, it doesn't mean that manufacturing is a bad thing to go into. And it's worth looking at it to see what those skills are today.
And we've got a question for John from Meg Richardson in Yorkville. She says she lives about a mile away from the proposed site. What do you think will happen to property values in that area?
Hi, Meg. as a former real estate guy, you know, there's two things that you leverage in a situation like this. Number one, are your property values going to go up? The likelihood is they will. But the question is, how is that development going to impact those local folks? So whether they had a small farm and they want to keep it small may not work as well if the transportation is kind of flying down the road and the streets are getting busier. So you're going to see some natural changes, right? But I think you're going to see some natural changes in this region no matter what. So I think that's why we talked about the planning. If you're not planning for these changes, then we're really just kind of pasting all this stuff together. And I don't think that's a good idea. And I don't think it's very efficient and effective from a financial standpoint for all of you. So I think that, yeah, if you get 1 million square feet coming into your area, is the area going to change? Yeah. The only ones that are going to stop it are the neighbors and the elected officials. So, the days, like when they said the days of, you know, Racine Steel and J.I. Case with 21,000 employees, you know, those days are gone. Yeah, and we had to adjust to them, and people will adjust to this.
So I think what Meg was looking for was up or down.
Well.
Yes.
Sell now.
Now that I don't have my real estate license, I'm not going to answer that question. The likelihood is you will see, I mean, just look at the price that they paid for per acre for this development. I mean, John Crimmings is here, and he can tell you, it was more than the market. So yeah, I think that the likelihood is, yeah, they're gonna see, everybody in this region should see some bump up.
This is a question for, I would say, either Debbie or Richard, and that is, what do we know about how stable these jobs are in human hands, or whether they're likely to become robotic sometime down the road and, you know, have 10 jobs done by humans replaced by one human operating 10 robots?
Well, there certainly will be a fair use of robots coming in, so we do know that. From an analytical standpoint, I guess that depends on the level of artificial intelligence as it grows, right? So I would say that over time, many of our jobs have become jobs that can be automated in some way, but it's created new opportunities and new types of jobs. So hard to have a crystal ball and know that, but I think, you know, they are using quite a bit of automation. We know that. We're glad about that because we teach automation and robotics. So I think, you know, we will, as Gateway has changed 106 years, so a lot of people think, well, if I go to Gateway and I took welding in 1970, if I go in their welding lab now, it probably looks like it did in 1970. Well, it doesn't. It has changed. There's robotic welding and there's different types of welding in that program. So yeah, the evolution of how their technology will change will match how all of our technology changes.
I think it makes only sense to expect that automation is going to have a major impact here. As I mentioned, the number of manufacturing jobs in the Midwest and in the country peaked in 1979 and been declining since. Mm-hmm. Some of that is outsourcing, some of that is plant closures, some of that is trade. A lot of it is automation. We're finding now that a lot of the outsourcing to places like China, the manufacturing, is beginning to come back to this country for transportation reasons, cost reasons, things like that. But it's coming back to a very different country from the one they left. Unions, for instance, have been broken in many places. And also the impact of automation. So you have jobs coming back. But the jobs that are coming back increasingly are not being taken by people, but they're being taken by machines. And as automation, artificial intelligence continues, we can expect this impact of automation on jobs to continue. And there's an awful lot of very smart people in this country who are sitting up nights worrying about what this is going to mean. We don't have the answer.
Quick question off of that. Debbie, do you know if Foxconn's has a manager in Taiwan who's sort of seconded to Wisconsin? Does that job count toward the job totals here?
I don't know. I don't know that.
Okay, let's take another question from the audience. Trevor from Racine, what are the chances the state will reverse its policy on regional transit authorities, making them legal again to fund the needed transit improvements for Foxconn and worker transportation?
I think that the conversation has begun. I mean, for the first time in quite a while, we're hearing the RTA conversation in Metra starting again. And I think that's good, and I think it's healthy. The state tried it years ago, and it got caught up in politics. And the city has done a study to show that just to extend the Metra train to Racine is incredibly expensive. But if you look at the whole region, it starts to whittle down a little bit, gets a little bit better. I think, again, it goes back to, number one, are you providing those employees transportation to and from the site? And then number two, what is the grander plan for our state and our region? And if we're not doing that, then we're just piecemealing, and the cost of that is astronomical.
Is that part of the discussion that Foxconn ought to play a role in, considering that they have a vested interest in getting employees to their facility?
I think it's a role that we should all play and get part of, because the reality is it saves us money. You know, if we start doing things on a more regional level, because we're competing globally. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. We are competing globally. And if we are not working on this together, I mean, Gateway has numerous programs that are nationally recognized programs. This is the place to be, and these are the people to do it. But if we're not looking at this from that perspective, then all we're doing is spending more of our money. So, you know, what we always ask people to do as our organization is look at the long-term impact of the use of the water. Not what you think it's going to be today, not what you think it's going to be tomorrow, but are we really going to go back to degrading water and going back to the 40s and 50s? Because we're still cleaning that up. So take the long look. I will guarantee you it will save you money.
Richard Longworth, is anybody good at taking the long look?
No, nobody is, because we don't do that. Everything is locked up within state boundaries here. And I think, I mean, John's absolutely right. 20 years from now, if you want to live or work or invest in any place with a reliable source of fresh water, it's here. We're going to be drawing more and more companies in, but how many of these companies are really going to put up with the political balkanization and fragmentation that we have here in this greater Chicago, Milwaukee, Indiana region? Companies like Foxconn, I think, are really going to have an impact on this, because they're going to demand that we get serious.
Richard Longworth of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, speaking at our Across the Divide special on Foxconn. It was recorded earlier this month at Prairie School in Wind Point. We'll take another quick break and then return with the conclusion of our Across the Divide special right here on Lake Effect from WUWM. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. We return now for the last part of Across the Divide, a critical conversation on next steps for Foxconn. Our guests are Debbie Davidson of Gateway Technical College, John Dickert of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, and Richard Longworth, author and fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. John Dickert responded to a question about what environmental safeguards are in place relating to the Foxconn project.
So our organization has been working for 14 years to do just that. So we work on everything from invasive species, which the shipping industry said we're not going to deal with, and now you're paying $500 million a year to try to hold it back. And we are, as taxpayers, us in Canada, to water runoff, which we try to work with the ag industry and try to come to a medium where, you know, we don't have what they have in Toledo. In Lake Erie, where you've got algal blooms, and basically their Lake Michigan looks like pea soup. So we try to work and get ahead of these issues, because the reality is, again, it only costs us more money when we don't get it on the front end. So I guess to her question is, we are constantly working, and we just penned a letter today, as a matter of fact, our entire organization, to the governor saying, we would like to work with you on this. because we just want to make sure that those systems are in place, because the technology's there, that you can actually send the water back cleaner than you got it out. So let's all do that together. What we know, and which is very little right now, is that all the environmental standards have been relinquished from this site. That terrifies.
But the federal regulations are still in place.
We don't know that. So we are trying to find out. That's what we're trying to find out. What regulations do they have? But rather than argue with them about it, what we're saying to them is, let us help you build the systems so you don't have to worry about it, because the technology is there.
But does the compact still rule?
Well, the compact basically tells them that if you're drawing over 100,000 gallons, in essence, you have to let people know.
And that still has force.
But that, well, if it, yeah.
But the compact doesn't necessarily, what does the compact not cover in this equation?
The compact doesn't cover much because they're not outside of the compact. They're using water inside. So basically all they have to do is tell us how much they're using. The concern that we have is when people start saying that you don't have to follow X regulations in environmental quality. What we know is that Foxconn does a lot of heavy metals in their process. You can process it out in what they call pre-treatment. And oftentimes the Racine Water Wastewater Department makes people do that, pre-treat, and then send it down the wastewater stream, and then we treat it, and we virtually send it back out cleaner than it comes in. So we can do that together. But first of all, we have to know what's in the agreement. And then second of all, we want to proactively go to Foxconn and say, how can we help?
So if I'm a local resident here or in southeastern Wisconsin, and I care about the quality of my water, and I want to know that the regulations are being followed, whatever they are, or mm-hmm. what regulations are in place, other than being in touch or following news from your organization, how do I stay informed? How do I know? Who do I pressure if I want to make sure that clean water is a priority for this new company?
Well, I think, you know, I think the people can ask their legislators, and the legislators have to give them the answers. You know, the reality is that we make $5 million a year, the city of Racine does, just for North Beach and tourism money. Tourism is one of the biggest issues in our region and in our state. You know, the river, the lake, all of it helps with our economy. So we don't want to go back to where we have to start cleaning it up again because of deregulation that happened that created this in the first place. So there's an economic loss, and we don't want that. So we want to get out in front as an organization and say, how can we help? If you can't find a technology, we will help you find it. We'll go to Israel if we have to find the technology, or to Canada or wherever. But we want to get in front of this issue and say, how can we help to make sure that this is not a future disaster for our kids and their kids?
Are you already having those conversations, or these are conversations you're hoping to have?
I'm hoping to have them. We're here. So we would love to have them. I mean, listen, you can argue and scream and shout about all this stuff, but I'd rather just get stuff done.
So we have another question that's been texted to us. What do we know about workers' rights and how this foreign company's presence is likely to impact the culture of Racine?
This is one of the questions you want to ask one of those towns down south that have put up with this. What are the workers' rights? How is this going to affect the town of Racine? What kind of a corporate citizen is this company going to be? Are they going to be involved in the community? Are they going to be contributing to health care? Are they going to be involved in housing issues, and especially in transportation issues? Or are they just going to sit back and figure, we've provided all these jobs, and in 25 years we'll be by your major taxpayer?
We can ask these questions to each other, but who should we be asking these questions to?
I think the legislators owe these folks an answer. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is, you know, $3 billion is a lot of money. I'd love it. you know, the average wage, we were in the city of Racine, we created 888 jobs and saved 1,000 jobs in addition. The average cost of that was about $10,000. The average incentive that you give on a national level for a company is anywhere from $40,000 to $50,000. This is roughly anywhere between $200,000 and $1 million a job. So if you're doing that, you know, I think that the public deserves the answers as to whether those workers are going to be from the area, if they're going to have the proper transportation. You've got the right team here that's going to do the work for them. They will put them and get them to that place. I guarantee you, mm-hmm. one of the best places in the country that's doing it right now. But, you know, listen, it's our tax dollars. I think we are owed those answers. We as an organization are simply saying, what's going to happen with the water? We want to help you economically. We want to help any company that wants to utilize our water. We just want to make sure that when it goes out, it's cleaner than when it came in.
This question has come up a number of times, but I'm going to ask it again because I know it's really important to a lot of our readers and listeners. What concrete steps are going to be taken, or what could be done to ensure that minority communities have access to these new jobs?
Well, what we can do is provide the access to the training, which is what Gateway does. That's what we've done all these years. We have the training available. We have the pre-training available if that's what's needed. If individuals have not had a solid work record or they don't have a high school diploma, if English is their second language, we have all of those services available to any resident within the Tri-County area. So as far as access to the training to prepare them for the jobs, that's the mission of the college, and that's what we do all day, every day.
You really have to keep an eye open on this. You know, as a former journalist, I very much admire the Journal Sentinel and NPR putting this thing on tonight. But this is just the first step. I think you folks have really got to keep an eye on this. Keep reporters down here. Check this out. Are they doing things like employing minorities, and to what degree, and what are they doing to promote this? Because if we don't keep an eye on them, nothing's going to happen.
And the other thing is, the last thing I would say is there are clawback provisions in the contract. I mean, I think you've got two things. Transportation is number one, because the minority community that doesn't have access to it is not going to get out to the job. So that's the first thing. The second thing is you're seeing a whole new group of people right now, and I met a lot of them, that are 55 to 60. They lost their job. No one wants to hire them for the last 5 or 6 years. And that's a community right now that's looking for work, and they're having a very difficult time finding it. So I think there's really three categories of people that need help. But if we're not providing the basics of transportation, we've got the training, you're going to have a really tough time.
Are they likely to find work in a facility like this, or are they likely to find work as a result of a facility like this being part of the community, would you say?
Yes.
Yeah. The number one thing that I heard, we did a little bus tour, rode around on the buses for a while, and we talked to everybody, and they said, I want to work a second job, but the bus doesn't come back after the second shift.
Right. It's a very serious issue. You've seen the book Janesville, the new book out on the closure of the GM plant there. One thing they did at the end of that was did a survey, and they discovered that the workers who had gotten retraining at the local community college, Blackhawk there, had a harder time finding jobs than those that hadn't. A rather shocking thing. And I think this raises the question that's, you know, something that you have to look at. Are you retraining mostly? Or are you training young workers to have these jobs? What do you do with the generations that's lost their jobs? I mean, it's a very cruel issue.
Yeah, we're doing both. Gateway has done something called a boot camp program, which has been running. We've done 27 boot camp sessions. And that is for a reskilling, but it's mainly people who have never worked in manufacturing. And they might be age 19 up to age 57 was the oldest one that we had. And we have a 97% job placement rate out of that program. So we work closely with employers to identify what are their needs, what are they looking for, and we provide skills training and case management to those that need it to get them ready for that. But we're also working with the high schools. So we work with all of the K-12 schools within the Tri-County area. We're working with them on what are the courses that they can offer in high school that are going to get those students more prepared, so that not only do they have technical, but they don't need remediation when they come to us, and we can shorten that time to completion if we don't have to start with basic math for them.
Right. So you see this as an issue not just for the at the technical college level, but all the way down the all the way down the educational ladder.
Absolutely.
Do any of you know if workers will be living on site?
I do not know.
This is the Foxconn pattern in Taiwan.
Well, I mean, let's talk about it for a second, because if you're building facilities on an eye system that is for a specific issue, you're going to have two issues that we dealt with as a city that are big, they're growing, they're disgusting, they're despicable, but they're there. The first one is the drug trafficking, which, you know, is when you get to areas that people aren't watching or they're not in a neighborhood, Nobody sees it. It goes on pretty frequently. The other one is sex trafficking. And, you know, Racine is blessed with a woman by the name of Carrie Hemig, who is literally saving women's lives. She created this program literally out of her house, and she's becoming a national model now. And she stops this. But one of the biggest places it happens is on highways and truck stops. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we're going to protect our little girls from all over this world, then just building a whole site out on the eye for residential, when you've got all this residential in our communities that could be utilized, again, I'm not sure it's a good money spending of our tax dollars.
But as far as worker protection goes, I don't know. Is Foxconn going to be unionized?
I have no idea.
Is that a dumb question?
I don't think it's a dumb question, but I think the audience knows what the answer is.
You know, this
so
is probably
what, so what are the embedded protections for workers?
Mitch, do you have any more questions there? We've got a few more minutes here before we wrap up.
Yeah, we're down to our last 5 minutes or so. This, I think, builds off of one of the topics we were talking about before. USA Today recently reported both Racine and Milwaukee are among the nation's worst cities for African Americans. How can Foxconn be a part of changing that dynamic? That's a little bit about what you were speaking to.
I think it's the hiring of minorities. It's the access that we make available to them to get them ready for those jobs. But then I think it's the transportation. I mean, we keep coming back to the same, you know. Yeah. Access to education, access to jobs, it's all transportation related as well.
I think you got to step back for a second and take a look at one of the issues is why. You had, when I was a kid here, 93% of the population was Caucasian. Now it's a 54% with 46% minority. So we had an entire series in my life where industry just left. Okay, those were uneducated people that were working and making a living wage. So their generation, the next generation, was not working, right? So they couldn't pick up on those jobs. And I think, and I see Alfonso here, and he'll probably tell you that if you talk to the pastors, the biggest issue, if you want to deal with the minority population right now, is poverty. And if you're not getting after the poverty issue, you're not getting after the real issue. Transportation is mm-hmm. a piece, education is mm-hmm. a piece, but if you're not dealing with the core issue of poverty, you're really not going to break those areas and those barriers down.
I have a question about the local spending to help expand services here for the number of workers that will come. They're skilled workers that might be bringing families. Mount Pleasant and Racine County are looking at expending an enormous amount of money on the Foxconn incentives. Is there going to be enough money left to expand the K-12 system that will be needed for more children in the region? Will there be enough spending on the infrastructure for the rest of the city, not just the roads that are going to service the factory? Like, what's the discussion on that, or have you heard of any discussion on that yet?
I haven't been part of that discussion.
No, when you look at, for instance, if you're going to put 10 million gallons out to the site per day, you're looking at anywhere from a 26 to 42-inch line out to that area. But you can't look at it like that. You have to look at the fact that if you're going to put that much water out there and they're going to build ancillary businesses around it and that region's going to grow, you put one larger or two larger pipes out to the area so you don't have to do it again. Because how many of us have seen a road that just got done, it dried, and then somebody cut into it? Okay? Drives us crazy, right? It costs us money, too. It's $1 million a mile. So what we have to do is, with Foxconn and everything, and the reason that we and our mayors and I think a lot of people are saying we need to open the doors of this contract and start talking about it and looking at it is because if you don't plan, you're going to run a single line out there. And then the next year, you're going to have to run another line out there. And then when they start really growing, you're going to have to run two more lines out there. That's not smart. So I think the transparency of this, the conversation, the reality of preparing to let these folks do their job and everybody else do their job makes it smarter and more efficient for everybody. If we're not doing that, we're just cutting into that road over and over again.
I suspect there are probably a lot of people in here with this question on their mind, and so I guess I'm going to ask it to the three of you. Do you see any possibility that this ends up not happening at all?
Well, I mean, listen, you're in negotiations right now, and I know there's been a lot of signatures and stuff, but when you're talking about And, you know, as a mayor, we worked and expanded 46 companies, and I will tell you, every negotiation was difficult and went down to the wire. You know, it's not easy to do. And because there are everything from costs of product to cost of materials to the cost of the infrastructure that weigh in on all this decision-making process that they're dealing with. I think until these folks start seeing the jobs and the development and all that other stuff, it's a we work through it kind of a phase. But I will tell you, 1 million square feet, that's no easy task. And it's going to take a lot of people, but I tell you, we got some great people here, and they're getting ready for it. We have to get our education system ready for it. They need some help too. But it's not an easy deal, not by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, Debbie Davidson, I assume you have to move forward as though it is going
we
to happen.
We do. And with every company that comes into the area, whether it's into Racine County or Kenosha County, and there's been a lot of companies coming into Kenosha County over the years as well, every company that we meet with, the number one thing they ask about is workforce. Is it there? Is it possible to train? What are the things that are in place for that? And so we move forward with every one of those in good faith, knowing, okay, these are the things that we need to do to be prepared.
Any thoughts?
No idea. Foxconn does not have the world's best record on this, but so far they seem committed to this. I think the community really has to make sure that this benefits the community without scaring it away, because if this investment went away, it would have a dampening effect in the future. So I think, you know, take them at their word, keep an eye on them. As we say in Chicago, trust everybody, but cut the cards.
Do you miss being a mayor at a time like this?
Heck no. It was the best job I ever had in my life and the toughest, and I was blessed. But I will tell you, I was mayor for about 2 months while this was going on, and we knew nothing. I think, to Alfonso's comment, we've got to be transparent about this and have conversations.
John Dickert is the former mayor of Racine, and he now heads the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative. Our Across the Divide panel also included Richard Longworth of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and the author of Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism, and also Debbie Davidson, Vice President of Business and Workforce Solutions at Gateway Technical College. Lake Effect's Mitch Teich and the Journal Sentinel's Aaron Richards moderated the discussion. It was recorded on site at Prairie School in Wind Point. Special thanks to the school for its hospitality and to Jason Reavy for field engineering. And that wraps up today's edition of the show. I'm Bonnie North. Lake Effect is produced by Mitch Teich, Audrey Nowakowski, Joy Powers, Mayan Silver, and me, with production support from Meredith Waters. We get additional reporting from Susan Bentz, Rachel Morello, and Aisha Turner, audio engineering from Jason Reavy, and web support from Michelle Maternowski. Willie Porter wrote our theme music. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I hope you can be with us again tomorrow and Sunday at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend. It's right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Fresh Air comes your way next. Stay tuned. It's 11 o'clock.